Is it Mr. Malia? Good morning to you and Ms. Miller. Good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin? Then, Mr. Malia, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, Ms. Miller. I am Kyle Malia, Assistant Douglas County Public Defender, and I represent the appellant KC in this matter. Based upon my brief, the arguments today, I'm asking that the court overrule the finding of the trial court and remand this matter with instructions to dismiss the petition filed under the Developmental Disabilities Court Order Custody Act, or DDCCA. At the conclusion in the trial court of the adjudication hearing, the district court found that the appellant had a developmental disability, was a threat of harm to others, and was in need of court-ordered services. While I didn't raise it in my brief, there were no other specific factual findings in the order of the trial court as required by the statutory scheme. Even so, based upon the evidence that was adduced specifically from Dr. Abel and Dr. Svoboda, this court should find that as a matter of law, the evidence was not clear and convincing that the appellant posed a threat of harm to others.
I'd like to talk with you a little bit about jurisdiction.
I
understand, and I'm sure you are aware, that your opponent has taken the same position as you, that there is jurisdiction in this case.
Yes.
You understand that the parties cannot confer jurisdiction by agreement, and thus we still have to determine whether we have jurisdiction or not, right?
I absolutely 100% agree.
Now, your assignment of error suggested that there had been a judgment. However, the rest of your brief seems to speak in terms of a final order. You understand that under our civil code, judgments and final orders are mutually exclusive. If it's a judgment, it can't be an order. If it's an order, it can't be a judgment. Right?
Yes, and I apologize. That was inartful writing on my behalf.
So you're taking the position today that it was a final order.
Yes, sir.
Now, you have, I think, accurately recited what the judge's order says, and you would also agree that you characterized it as an adjudication order, but the DDCCA does not use that phrase. That's a shorthand phrase that may be appropriate to describe what happened, but that's not a phrase from the DDCCA, right?
No, and I was trying to distinguish because in this case, there was a criminal matter in an associated Douglas County criminal case, and I was trying inartfully to distinguish between a trial under the criminal code and the hearing that is held under the DDCCA.
Now, as I look at the record in the DDCCA case, I do not find any commitment or treatment or any sort of commitment, voluntary or involuntary, in our DDCCA record. There's no emergency protective commitment order. There's no, in the order from which you purport to appeal, there is no commitment. There is no treatment that's ordered. And in fact, the DDCCA statute has some very short time frames.
Yes.
Between what we may agree may be characterized as an adjudication and the disposition. Am I missing something in the record?
No, Justice Castle. So in representing KC in this matter, we had the adjudication, and under the DDCCA, the disposition hearing happens 30 days later. And so without guidance from case law, without guidance from the statute on when the right time to appeal, I had to make an educated guess as to when this court would want us to bring that up before it.
Now, if it turns out that we were to say that treatment, or at least involuntary commitment for an indefinite period of time was an essential to a substantial effect upon a substantial right, you would agree that we don't have involuntary commitment for an indefinite period of time in this record yet?
In this record, there is not a commitment because we did not include the dispositional hearing, which happened after the hearing the finding that we're appealing. And I think because of the nature of these types of cases, what I believe, based upon the Mental Health Commitment Act, based upon how the court has treated Sex Offender Commitment Act, based how it has treated adjudications in parent cases where the finding of fact is, does the district court have jurisdiction over this person to then ongo into the future? Then the dispositional hearing or the commitment hearing is, what is the treatment? And so it's two different questions there.
Well, it could be. I mean, at this point, we don't know. It could be send him home. That could be the treatment.
It could be.
And consequently, how do we on this record say that there has been a substantial effect upon a substantial right?
Well, being ordered, being committed, being found to be a developmentally disabled person with a threat of harm to others, and then also in need of court-ordered treatment, I think that is the finding that is affecting the substantial right. Because in the DDCCA, once that finding is made, there is no clear what's the end of it.
Now, the record does not reflect any dispositional hearing.
That's correct.
And I hate to ask you, since your previous response indicated that there may have been one anyway, I hate to ask you about things outside the record, and I'm not going to, so I will ask you, there is no other appeal pending, is there?
No.
All right.
And Justice Castle, this is a conversation that not in the record that was had. It was had is whether or not a case like this can go on while an appeal is pending. And I think the reason that we have two different arguments here is this person in need of, do they fit the statutory definitions of threat of harm, developmentally delayed, and in need of services? And then the other question is, what type of services? And the what type of services, especially when this court is, and multiple courts, so the U.S. Supreme Court has found that developmental disabilities are lifelong issues. They're not ending. This is not a something where we can do drug treatment and then we're done, or do a drug court program and then we're done. It is one where it's lifelong, that the fear is, and the reason why I appealed it now, is without guidance, if we don't appeal the order of the court finding that he is in the jurisdiction of the court under the DDCCA, then we get to a adjudication hearing, which happens 30 days later, and we've already missed the 30-day time period for that.
So if we were to say there is no jurisdiction until the disposition, under the facts of this particular case, how would your client be prejudiced, if at all?
Well, if he is, it's the finding, the and although they are confidential, it's the he is a person of named under the statute.
Couldn't that have been raised in an appeal from the dispositional hearing?
Well, I know that
if we say that there's been no substantial effect upon a substantial right.
And I know that this court has said in other civil contexts, and again, without looking, without direct guidance, this is essentially a case of first impression, it was appeal to not lose the right, to not sleep on his right, not to provide him ineffective assistance of counsel. And besides that, I do think it is appropriate because while it's pending, while the disposition is pending, he is still prejudiced because he isn't still ordered by the court to do certain things.
In this case,
there was not an emergency petition filed because in the associated criminal case, he was found incompetent and not restorable, and he was ordered under that case to the Lincoln Regional Center.
But in the DDCCA case, there's been no such order, has there?
In this record, no. Outside of the record, yes. but what the court has in front of it, that hearing was not included in the Bill of Exceptions because it was from...
You're talking about a dispositional hearing?
A dispositional type hearing is not in the record before the court today.
If we have jurisdiction, doesn't the trial court not have jurisdiction?
So, and again, when looking at other civilly created schemes, juvenile cases, mental health cases, sex offender cases, is that when an appeal is raised, I don't believe for treatment purposes, because of the nature of the individual, because the mental health, because of the developmental disability, because of the need for ongoing treatment, that may change. And appeals, they go as quick as they can, but they are not speedy processes.
Both you and your opposing counsel have analogized the DDCCA to the Mental Health Commitment Act.
Yes.
But it specifies how appeals are taken and indeed specifies that they be taken from treatment orders.
Yes.
The DDCCA does not contain any similar provision, and in fact the only requirement is an advisement of the right to appeal from a final disposition. Isn't that correct?
And I will defer to the court on what the exact language, I did not memorize it.
Okay.
But I will say that there is no clear guidance on how to appeal in the statute. I believe the court does have jurisdiction over that order adjudicating or finding that that KC was a developmentally delayed person who poses a threat of harm to others and is in need of treatment.
And in fairness, the statutory advisement may say final order rather than final disposition.
And I'll defer to what that is actually written. Obviously, that's the controlling here. Unless there are any more questions, that's my time. I believe the court has jurisdiction. I'd ask the court to overrule.
If we were to get to the merits, give us your best argument. And I think you're not contesting developmentally disabled. You're contesting only the prong about a threat of harm to others.
Yes, I believe the record is clear. The evidence was clear that Casey does suffer from a developmental disability. The only actions that happened were two very minor assaults, which did not pose a risk of substantial bodily injury, which is also not defined in the DDCCA. So I analogize to the criminal codes as the other four grounds within the threat of harm to others are also analogous to criminal charges. And I don't believe any escalation of conduct or any verbal threats, which are not aggressive in nature, can play any part.
What amount of proof would be required to establish threat?
So, the DDCCA is it says clear and convincing evidence for the trial court, and so I don't believe, based upon the evidence, the finding was based on clear and convincing evidence. There's no firm conviction that a headbutt and a punch resulting in a fat lip and a headache and a swollen eyebrow is enough to risk that substantial risk to life or permanent disfigurement. And I use
it was characterized in the criminal case as felonies, right?
The criminal case included assaults on healthcare workers, third-degree assaults on healthcare workers, so they are felonies because of the individual assaulted, not because of the conduct.
Is it difficult to imagine if someone is headbutting and causing an injury to someone's eye, that serious permanent disability might conceivably result from such conduct?
Conceivably, in a nebulous yes, but the standard under the criminal code is a substantial risk. And based upon the facts we have, based upon how what happened, I don't believe there's a substantial risk. There could be some 2%, 1%, reasonable doubt risk that it could happen, but there's not a substantial risk that permanent disfigurement or death could occur from that. There's always an anecdotal story about something happened, and this was the danger, and this person died because of seeming innocuous hit to the chest. That, I don't believe, is a substantial risk as contemplated by the criminal statutes. And I understand that that I am analogizing to the criminal statutes, because there is no, this is a case of second or first impression, depending on how the court wants to look at it. There is no definition of serious bodily injury. There is no definition of sexual assault. There is no definition of lewd and lascivious conduct. There is no further definitions of those five categories. And I think when judging those, looking at other parts of the Nebraska Code, not just Section 71, is helpful. And I think that because it's contemplating what are amounting to four other criminal situations, that analogizing to the definition of substantial bodily injury is appropriate here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Miller, good morning to you again.
Good morning, Your Honor.
And you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, Chief Justice Hebigan, members of the judiciary panel, and Mr. Melia. The state is asking that you uphold the district court's finding that our subject in this case, Mr. Casey, is in fact a person that is developmentally disabled and that he fits under the definition found in Chapter 71 as determined by Judge Masteller in the district court. Justice Castle, I had some opening remarks, but I'm going to come to you first because I know that you peppered Mr. Melia with quite a few questions about why.
And you could reasonably answer.
Yes, and I presumed that you were going to ask me the same. I want to direct your attention to In Re Interest CR, which is one of the only times this particular court has taken up the DDCCA or the...
That was the challenge of the constitutionality.
Correct.
And we did not talk about jurisdiction at all, did we?
Well, you didn't, but at the same time, in that particular case, that was the first time that the court had ordered, and this is the lower court, had found that CR was actually a person that was developmentally disabled under the statute. And this court continued with their analysis and but didn't make a determination.
We have a well-settled proposition of law that just because we didn't discuss it doesn't mean that that case stands for the proposition.
Sure.
That we have jurisdiction. So let's talk about the record in this case.
Now, Absolutely.
I'm not necessarily persuaded that you could always say that there's no jurisdiction from an appeal from what we are characterizing as an adjudication order. If there had been an emergency commitment, if there had been some temporary commitment for an indefinite period of time, perhaps, but on this record, you heard my questions of Mr. Melia. Am I missing something in the record that would show that there has been an involuntary commitment for an indefinite period of time?
Because there was a companion criminal case that held Mr. KC in custody until such time as the district court judge put out his order regarding the evidentiary hearing, no, there was no, there is no order in your record to indicate any sort of custodial care. The state would argue, or the appellee would argue, that once the order authored by Judge Masteller on May 31st, that then allowed for the court and for the state to have some sort of custody and jurisdiction over Mr. Casey, and
so you're saying that there's some commitment that's not expressed in the order from which the appeal was taken?
I'm merely stating, and I apologize if I misspoke, that because there was a criminal action in which the defendant under the criminal action, who is our subject in this particular case, did not, because the state had a parallel case going, I was able to keep him in custody under his bond on the criminal case, and therefore no temporary custody needed to be established under the civil case.
Well, while it may be to some degree a legal fiction, nonetheless, that criminal detention was not pursuant to the DDCCA and was legally independent of the DDCCA, wasn't it?
That is correct.
All right. So in this case, there's nothing that either side can point to in this record that shows an involuntary commitment for an indefinite period of time.
Correct. In this record, we do not have
that. Can we take judicial notice of such thing? Would that make any difference for the purposes of jurisdiction?
If the court wishes to do so, I would ask that they would take judicial notice of the fact that the lower court did have Mr. Casey in custody at the time under the Criminal Act, which is why there was no immediate action taken with regards to a placement with him under the Civil Act instead.
Was the criminal case pending before the same district court judge?
Yes.
Thank you.
I know that the particular issue with regards to whether this is a final appealable order is one of the issues that the court has.
You agree it's not a judgment?
Correct. I would say that this was an order after an evidentiary hearing.
If it's going to be appealable at all, it has to be within the definition of a final order.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're not contending that there's some other statutory provision in the DDCCA or elsewhere that would, other than 25-1902 sub 1 sub B?
Correct.
All right.
Yep, we are under sub B. We would argue, as Mr. Melia argued in his appellant's brief, and we in a way agreed on our appellee brief, that 25-1902 subsection B is applicable because a substantial right was taken from Casey when he was ordered from his evidentiary hearing to then be a developmentally disabled individual under Chapter 71, thereby having him subjected to further medication, further treatment and evaluation by the Department of Health and Human Services, subjected to further court orders, and to remain in the placement facilities in which he was until such treatment.
But none of that appears in the order that you're talking. All that appears in the order that you're appealing from is a requirement on the department to prepare a plan and an order for a subsequent hearing. Aren't you all assuming about things that are going to come into effect, or at least at that moment, you were assuming that they were going to come into effect in the future?
Given the, and then I would ask the court to, again, look at the Bill of Exceptions and the testimony presented by Ms. Abel and Dr. Svoboda explaining Mr. Casey's history and continued history with the department, the fact that he continues to escalate, the fact that he was already under the care, and that due to these continued aggressions and physical violence that continued and persisted throughout his time with the department and even prior to becoming an adult, he has shown that he is a higher risk to reoffend, that he is a risk of threat and harm to others. So it was a foregone conclusion that he was going.
Did the trial court precisely say he's in need of custody, or did the trial court say I order him up to custody?
It is not in the record, but I can say to the court that he was remanded into custody to remain there with the Department of Health and Human Services.
You're not talking about the dispositional hearing. That's not in our record, right?
I'm addressing the order on appeal. What?
Correct. There is not a specific.
What hints do we have with respect to custody?
Isn't there an order that sets forth that the petitioner has met its burden of proving by clear and convincing evidence that Cody Carter is a person in need of court-ordered custody and treatment?
Yes, Justice, and I believe that was on the May 31st order. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's my question.
Yes, my apologies, Justice.
Is there a wisp of custody in this order on appeal?
The statement made by Justice Funk would be the sum and substance of that wisp.
The need of custody.
Correct.
Before your time completely elapses, you want to get to the merits-based argument.
So the state looked at the merits in this particular case, and I would like you to focus on two specific cases. One is Heller v. Doe, which really sets out for the court, and this was a 1993 case that was argued at the United States Supreme Court, and something that under In Re Interest CR, this court has then incorporated in when looking at this risk of threat of harm. I appreciate and understand that the state does not have to show, nor is it a burden that the appellee has to show, a future threat of harm. I believe that in this particular case, with regards to KC, he is an individual that has demonstrated time and time again, much as Heller versus Doe pointed out, that he has created a static imprint of his continued physical misconduct, his threat of physical harm, his assaultive behavior, his combative behavior, damage to property, and self-harming risks that he has done to himself. And the Bill of Exceptions lays out quite a few different places in which Mr. Carter has demonstrated aggressive, threatening, and continued outbursts. So when you take the past history as Heller versus Doe walks you through, you take that with In Re Interest CR, we have a situation in which our district court not only evaluated KC based on the present actions and his attempted threat of serious bodily injury.
Do you agree that you have to show one of the list of acts in 71-1115?
I would agree that we have shown attempted threat of serious bodily injury. This is not a case of a sexual assault or anything else of that nature. So
you're hanging your hat on attempted.
That is what we proceeded on, and that is what I'm arguing for today. Yes. So I appreciate that Mr. Melia spent a lot of the time in his brief arguing that we didn't rise to the level of serious bodily injury. My argument says that at some point we have an individual who is so incredibly dangerous that while being restrained, he still physically assaulted a nurse who was in the conduct of her own care. In the record, Officer Pena testified that sucker punches alone can cause serious bodily injury to individuals. In fact, we have cases before us in Douglas County where we've got sucker punches that lead to homicide cases. There are serious bodily injuries that come from this. The record is also clear that Mr. Carter, Mr. KC, went out of his way to continue to be combative, had to be restrained by three or four people. At some point, had he been permitted, had they just let him go and he continued his physical rampage, who knows what could have occurred as a result. And given his past history, I would submit to the court that it would have been to the level of a serious bodily injury.
Chief, may I ask one question out of time?
You certainly may.
Before you sit down, I'm not going to ask what happened at the dispositional hearing that we don't have in our record, but I am going to ask whether more than 30 days has passed since any dispositional order was entered.
Yes.
Thank you.
With that, I ask that you uphold the lower court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, counsel. That concludes arguments in In Re Interest of KC. You are hence excused. And again, thank you.